Welcome to another edition of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey, and this is one of the conversations we have been looking forward to. And we almost missed our chance because Ken Holland gave up the GM title in Detroit after 22 years, but he is back in the game with Edmonton. We're going to talk about the unbelievable talent he has with the Oilers and the fire that still burns in him to take on this new challenge. Some things you never knew about him, from working in a liquor store back in the day to make ends meet, to the fact he may be the most organized man in the world. We'll talk to him about talking Steve Yzerman into taking a hometown discount and now making trades with his former protege who's in his old job. Plus, does he think Mike Babcock will get back into coaching? So happy to welcome in the Oilers general manager, Ken Holland, into the NHL Executive Suite. One of my favorite things about these GM meetings in March is the games are on while you're all going here. So who better to talk to the morning after an 8-3 win than Ken Holland? So I hope you're in a good mood for this.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, nice to be with you.
So you could have, after almost 30 years in Detroit, put up your feet, relaxed.
Yeah.
Gone fishing, picked up some hobbies, and instead here you are back for another kick at the can as a general manager. Why'd you do it?
Well, I'd been manager for Detroit for 22 years. I'd been with the Red Wings for 36 years. So, I mean, 64 years old, 60, two-thirds of my life, I've been a Detroit Red Wing. When Steve Yzerman stepped down, and we started to get towards November, December. It was getting to be playing our way out of the playoff spot. Chris Ilitch and I had a conversation and felt that I'd reach out to Steve and see if Steve wanted to come home, and he did. And as we got down to the end of the season, we asked for permission, I think, in about March. I'm not sure, but Chris Ilitch and I had a conversation, and then somewhere about March, we reached out to Tampa Bay and asked for permission to talk to Steve. And once Steve was coming on board in Detroit, the ownership had offered me an opportunity to stay as a senior advisor, work with Steve. I go back to Steve's first year in Detroit in, I think, 1984. His first year as a Red Wing was my first year as a Red Wing. I was signed as a minor league goaltender by Jim DeVolano, so we go back a long period of time. But I went to the World Under 18 Championships last year. Steve was in charge, and I knew I was in the senior advisor. And you're still there. I still felt that I had lots of energy, lots of passion. Was excited about evaluating players for the draft. And shortly thereafter, got a call from Bob Nicholson, and was looking for somebody to take over as the manager in Edmonton. And still felt I had the energy and the passion. And obviously, I'm a Western Canadian boy, so I'm familiar with the prairies. I lived in Medicine Hat, played junior, which is 6 hours away from Edmonton. The opportunity to work with Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and lots of other good young players there ultimately was something that as I kind of it was an emotional time. I'd been a Red Wing for 36 years. The same ownership, worked with Jim DeVolano the entire time. He was my mentor. So it was a tough decision. But as they kind of worked internally through the process and finally made the decision to leave to Edmonton, was a tough decision. But once I made the decision, I was excited about this new challenge and new opportunity.
I just saw Jim DeVolano, and he actually told me that he said to you when you asked him, should I go? He said, run, don't walk.
Yeah.
But you talk about, the ties, for so many years. Even when you pull up to your house, your old house in Detroit, there was like a Red Wings logo in stone and red flowers all around.
Yeah.
What was the hesitation, if any, about leaving and starting over in Edmonton?
I wasn't about Edmonton. I think it was just I'd been a Red Wing for so long. I just, I love being a Red Wing. I mean, I think as I was manager in Detroit for a lot of years, one of the things that I was, for lack of a better word, selling to our players throughout the time as I was manager was it was about team. It's about sacrifice, a little less money at the, you know, even pre-salary cap. You know, we still did have a budget, as hard as it is to believe we did have a budget. So having people take a little bit less, leaving some money for the manager to go out and spend it on some other players, you know, maybe spending an extra year in the American Hockey League, even if you're NHL ready, our team was deep and you had to kind of bide your time. You know, when you were there, you know, you're gonna have to play a few less minutes. You know, I know signed Luke Robitaille and he comes to Detroit and I think he's playing 18, 19 minutes in LA and he's playing 12 or 13 minutes and had a number of conversations and Luke was adjusting to a different role. So all the things that I was selling, I knew it was my time. I knew it was my time. I think that was you know, when you've been somewhere for 36 years, you've built up incredible relationships, lifetime relationships. And then personally, you know, we loved, we loved living in Northville. We had friends, we had roots. Three of our four kids went to Michigan State. So for all those reasons, it was a very difficult decision. But when I went to the World Under 18s and I realized that I was going to miss being the guy to make some decisions. Instead of sort of being this, you know, the advisor and giving you my opinion and then sitting by and let somebody else going. And I'd been used to making the decisions, everybody, you know, and I think that I realized that I would like another opportunity to be a general manager excited to be in Edmonton.
I want to get back to that players taking less money. That's actually on my list. But let's stay with going to Edmonton. And there's this picture of you when you were first introduced, of Bob Nicholson on one side all buttoned up in a suit and tie, and then Darryl Cates on the other, really tan, long hair, leather blaze, little leather jacket. What's he been like as an owner to get to know?
Well, he's been fabulous. He wants to win. Obviously, he built... he built a beautiful building in downtown Edmonton. He's from Edmonton, born and raised there. I talked to him on a Bob Nicholson talks to him on an everyday basis. Okay. I talk to him not as much as Bob, you know, but I certainly talk to him, and then you know see him. He comes to some of our games, in Edmonton, on the road in California, in New York. He's so tons of passion. Tons of passion. Once he wants the Oilers to get back to being, a playoff team and competing for the Stanley Cup. I think he grew up following the Oilers, you know, in their heyday. And you think about the dynasty and the Gretzky's and the Messiers and the Coffees and the Führers and the Ari Currys and those great players and those great teams. You go forward to a period of time and he's in a position to buy the Edmonton Oilers and he buys the Edmonton Oilers. He's seen it. He's lived and he saw the excitement that team, when the Oilers were in their heyday in the late 80s, early 90s, I was living in Medicine Hat, Alberta, scouting for the Detroit Red Wings. So I'm 6 hours away, but, you know, in the same province. So followed the passion and the excitement of the fan base in cheering for that team on an everyday basis. And certainly, I don't know. I do know it's in a salary cap era. Those types of teams are, if they're not impossible to build, they're impossible to keep. You know, like you can, if you do build it like that, you're going to be able to have like a little quick window, and then the salary cap is going to hit you. But certainly, the goal is to build it for the Stanley Cup. And when you've got the core players that we've got at the age that they're at, certainly that is a legitimate possibility.
It doesn't seem to happen in hockey in the NHL as much as maybe the other sports, where there are some owners who get sometimes too involved, where they want to offer, you know, player personnel, you know,
yeah.
opinions
yeah.
or input.
Yeah.
Were you concerned about that at all with someone who's so passionate and is involved and is around? Were you worried about that at all when you took the job?
Well, I think, you know, I had lots of, you know, I'd worked for the same owners for 36 years and 22 years as the general manager. And certainly we had built, Mr. Ilitch, Ms. Ilitch, you know, Jim Devolano, built a relationship that things happen a certain way, and I knew, you know, you go about your business, and I knew how to certainly manage up, for lack of better words, and build a relationship with the people that own the team. So that's certainly something that takes time. You just don't all of a sudden show up the first day at work, and all of a sudden it's like you've been there for 22 years. You got to build a relationship. Bob Nicholson is really, really important in terms of the front office, from an ownership and front office. Bob has been there now for a number of years. Bob has an incredible relationship with Daryl. They talk on a regular basis, and I talk to Bob every day. And again, like I talk to Daryl at times in the year and points in the season and that are necessary. So Daryl's informed on a day-to-day basis and make sure that I talk to him enough so that we have a relationship. But I know he's got an incredible amount of passion and excitement to try to build the Oilers.
Sometimes it's hard when the owner's really a big fan.
Well, you know what? You know, I can reflect more on my Detroit days. Like the Ilitches were, they were not only fans, but they passion for the team, for the city, the desire to win. And I think that's a great thing. I think it's a great thing when your owners, they're all in. You know, they want to win. They want, and that's Daryl Cates. That's certainly, I was fortunate. I've only worked for basically two owners, and both have tons of passion.
So let's go back to the beginning when you were getting your feet wet. And one of the things I love was that when Jim Devolano did hire you to be a scout, an entry-level scout, he had to talk to your wife first to make sure she knew what she was getting into. Yeah. Did you know what you were getting into?
Yeah, I played 9 years of pro, 1985, I think. And Jim Devolano, I played at my last 2 years with the Adirondack Red Wings, the farm team. I remember getting the call in about early May from Jim Devolano that my contract expired. There was a young goaltender, Chris Pusey, who the Red Wings had drafted. They were turning him pro. I was 29 years of age, 5'8" minor league goaltending. There wasn't a big future for 5'8" 29-year-old goaltenders. And he was calling me to tell me that they were not going to sign me to another contract. And I've got my agent, working to try to find me another job and not having a lot of luck. And I know Bill Dineen, at some point in time, 2-3 weeks later, Jim Devolano was having a conversation with Bill Dineen, the Adirondack Red Wing coach, about the getting ready, building the Red Wings for the 85-86 season. And Jimmy D happens to mention to Bill Dineen that he's looking for a Western Canada scout. And Bill Dineen says that he would stake his reputation on hiring Ken Holland. It's funny how life works. Bill and I lived in the same apartment complex. So
he was your coach.
He was my coach. And then when we would go, and then it is like my wife Cindy and I, we had our kids were born 81, 83, and 84. So my first year we had the two kids, and the second year we had three kids. And when we go on a road trip, say to Springfield or where we're going on a road trip, I would jump in the car and drive with Bill from our apartment complex down to the rink, which is 20 minutes away, so that Cindy could have a vehicle while we were gone. And then when we came back at 2:00 in the morning, I'd jump in the car and I'd drive back to the apartment complex with Bill. So Bill and I developed a relationship, that went beyond player, just because we just happened to live in the same apartment complex. And on occasion, Bill's wife would come and babysit for, so Cindy had to go down to the grocery store and buy some food. So Bill recommended strongly to Jim Devolano to hire me as a Western scout. And next day or two, Neil Smith, the chief scout at the time, and Jim
Rangers
Devolano.
Neil Smith?
Yes, the Rangers, Neil Smith. He was the chief scout of the Red Wings,
right,
and I was the Western scout.
Detroit,
and
right.
Then he left and he went to the New York Rangers. They called one day and said they were looking for a Western scout. Actually, Neil called me one day. We talked for a half an hour, 45 minutes, because Neil had been the general manager of the Adirondack Red Wings, and we had a bit of a relationship, but he was working out of Detroit. Had a great talk and said, tomorrow, Jimmy D's calling and I'm calling. And they got on. We talked. They interviewed me for about an hour. And I wanted the job and said I had tons of passion and wanted to stay in hockey. And at the end of the conversation, Jim Devolato said, Ken, I got one thing. He says, could you put Cindy on the phone? I'd like to talk to Cindy. And I put Cindy on the phone, and Jimmy D talked to Cindy about how much time a scout has away from home. And Cindy, you know, you've got three small children there, and you're going to spend a lot of time on your own raising those kids while your husband's out looking for hockey players for the Detroit Red Wings. And Cindy totally supported me and totally endorsed the everything to Jimmy D. And a day or two later, I got a call from Jim Devolano offering me a job to be the Western Scout for the Red Wings. And about I'd made $30,000 as my last year playing in Adirondack Red Wings. So they offered me $30,000 my first year scouting with the Red Wings. And about a week later, John Paddock, who was the general manager and the head coach of the Hershey Bears, was looking to sign a goaltender, a veteran goaltender, to go play in Hershey. And he called and he offered me $35,000. Now, you know, when you got so I said, John, can you give me 24 hours? I've got this opportunity to be a scout. And I thought to myself, you know, I loved playing hockey. I mean, anybody that plays, you love playing hockey. And I thought to myself, you know what, this time next year, I'm going to be out looking for another job. And I called John Paddock back and told John I'd made a decision. I'm going to retire and accept a scouting job. And certainly for me, personally, the rest is this history. I couldn't have worked, you know, Jim Devolano and Neil and I became really, really tight. And then 4 years later, Neil went to the Rangers to be the general manager in 1989. And Jimmy D, I had a year to go on my contract. And, you know, Neil wanted me to go to New York. And Jimmy flew me to Detroit and said, I don't want you to leave. And he made me the chief amateur scout of the Detroit Red Wings in 1989. And you know, obviously it's turned out for me personally very good. Very, very fortunate to work for incredible owners and have a mentor like Jimmy D, who took me under his wing. And then in 1994, to work with Jim Devolano and with Scotty Bowman, for me it was Harvard. You know, it was to work with, and from 94 to 97, of the 3 years I was the assistant manager, you know, from 89 to 94, I was the chief amateur scout working out of Medicine Hat, Alberta. And in 1994, they moved me to Detroit to be in the office every day, run the amateur draft, and run the farm team, build the farm team. But to work every day with Jim Devolano and Scotty Bowman, for me, was like going to the Harvard of hockey.
So at what point were you shacking up with your parents, living in the basement with your wife and three kids? And working part-time in a liquor store?
Yeah, that was actually you know, every summer we would come home from pro hockey. The last 2-3 years, say 82, 83, 84, 85, we'd come home from playing pro hockey in the American League, and we'd come back to Vernon. My wife's a nurse, and I got the last two, three years, I worked at the liquor, got a summer job at the liquor store. And
players today would... They wouldn't believe it, right?
Yeah. So what we would do for the first 2-3 weeks, 4 weeks was we'd move into my parents' basement in Vernon, BC, and there was one bedroom there. Cindy and I'd be in the bedroom around the corner in the corner of the living room or whatever downstairs. We just sort of set up beds for our kids until we found a place to rent for the summertime. So we're in that. So in 1985, you know, in that time frame, when Jim Devolano calls me and tells me that my contract has expired, he's not going to re-sign me. That 2 week period until I get offered the job to be the scout, I'm going to work at the liquor store. Cindy's working at the hospital, and I'm in the basement, and we're looking for a place to live, and the phone's ringing, and I'm calling my agent, and my I know my mom can kind of sense that it's getting to be tough to get a job. So one day I come home from the liquor store, and my mom says to me, Ken, you know, Cindy's gone up to Lakeview Pool with the kids' public little pool, and you're supposed to go up and join her. So I go downstairs and put on my bathing suit, and I come upstairs, and my mom pulls me. She says, Ken, before you leave, I want to grab you for 2 minutes. And I says, what's that? She says, Ken, what's going on with the hockey business? I can hear the phones ringing. It doesn't sound good. And I said, Mom, I'm not sure. It's getting to be tough. And she says, Ken, if you don't get a hockey job, what are you going to do? You know, you're 29 years of age. You've got three kids under the age of four. How are you going to feed your family? And I said, well, Mom, Cindy and I have been talking a little bit. I think Cindy's going to work at the hospital here in Vernon. I'm going to go to Vernon College, and I'd eventually go to UBC. I'm going to get a numbers. I'm going to get some kind of a numbers degree. I like numbers. And then my mom says to me, Ken, you're 29 years of age. You got three kids. You got to put food on the table. And she says the Vernon News can't come on an everyday basis. And she's been looking at the advertisement sections, and Electrolux vacuum cleaners were looking for somebody to sell Electrolux vacuums in Vernon. And so she had called the number, and the job was open, and in I think 40% of every sale went to, she'd done some checking and some research. She had all the numbers for me, and she says, Ken, I've had Electrolux vacuum cleaners my entire life. They're the best vacuum on the market. You got the gift to gab. You know a lot of people here in Vernon. It's I think it's a great job. And she says, I'm going to be your first sale. And before I can think anything, she says, I've talked to Grandma Eastbrecht, who is my mom's mom, who lived five doors down. Grandma Eastbrecht's your second sale. I thought, boy, this business is going pretty good. I said, Mom, any idea the status of Aunt Emma's vacuum? She lived two doors down. And she says, Ken, I haven't talked to Aunt Emma yet, but she's family. Family takes care of family. I'm sure you're doing good. So I thought, boy, I've sold three vacuums here. This business is going pretty good. And then I thought, boy, I got to leave 23rd Street and go down 39th Avenue, starting to go door to door to door. Just not sure if I wanted to do that. And within a day or two, the phone rings. It's Jim Devolano.
Thank goodness.
Offering me the, yeah, thank goodness, offering me the job as a scout for the Detroit Red Wings, and I accepted. So it's funny how life takes you in different paths.
And you never wanted to probably vacuum at your own house. Every time you see a vacuum, there, yes, for the grace, right, of God, go,
yeah,
I.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. So here you are in Edmonton. They had picked first overall four times, but missed the playoffs 12 of the last 13 years. What did you see when you dug in when you got there?
Potential. You know, just what you'd said, you made the playoffs once in 13. If we can, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, you know, Klefbom, Nurse, Larson, Pete Chiarelli, the last manager. I know they had drafted some kids there that our scouting staff thought were good young players. An opportunity. Certainly, you know, in my time in Detroit, we had, you know, from 94, you know, 95, we lost in the finals to New Jersey. So 93, 94, we became a cup contender, you know, a good regular season team that had hopes. And then in 2009, 8 and 9, we went to the finals. 2010 and 11, we lost in round two. So, you know, you had that 15, 16, 17, 18-year period where we were a legit cup contender, a pretty good cup contender. What did we have? We had a nucleus. You know, and the nucleus from 2000, from when I became manager in 97, you know, Fedorov and Yzerman and Konstantinov and Lidstrom, and then as we, things happen, and then 10 years later it's Zetterberg and Datsyuk, and still Lidstrom is there. So, but that those core of players, and certainly there's those core of players in Edmonton there. So and then, you know, Connor was 22, Leon was 23. They've just, you know, the calendar's flipped now. They're 23 and 24, but they're relatively young. They're just starting to come into their prime. So an opportunity to get back to be a general manager in the National Hockey League, where I love the challenge of running an NHL team. The opportunity to try to build, there's the nucleus there, the opportunity to try to build a team back into the, you know, the last 3 years in Detroit, we missed the playoffs, and we were in rebuild mode. And
how hard was that for you?
It's tough for everybody. It's tough for the fans. It's tough, you know, for the longest time we were cup contenders, and you were excited about games in April, and can we turn April into May? And the odd time, I think six times we went to the finals, and May becomes June, and your team is, and all of a sudden, you get to Christmas time and you're 10 points out, and you get to Christmas time and you're 10 points out, and you get to Christmas time and you're 10 points out, and 10 points, and you got to climb over six or seven teams. You're a long ways away. You know, you need to win 10 in a row just to get back into the game, really. So it was tough, and coming to Edmonton, certainly I know they've missed the playoffs quite a bit, but I did know they went to round two 3 years ago. With lots of the players that they had, So I had a great relationship with Bob Nicholson. I've known Bob a long time through Hockey Canada. I was the general manager, assistant general manager of the Canadian team in the World Championships in 2004, and then the general manager in 2005. And I'm from Vernon, B.C. Bob's from Penticton, B.C. They're an hour and a half apart, 90 miles apart in the Okanagan Valley. So I've known Bob Nicholson a long time. The core of the team was young, the passion of the Oilers fans, and, you know, the opportunity to be an NHL general manager one more time. And certainly after all, as you'd said, after all those years of possibilities, playoff possibilities in Detroit and going into rebuild mode, I didn't want to finish like that. I wanted to see if I could come help make a bit of a difference in Edmonton, and that's certainly what keeps me going on an everyday basis. I want to, you know, we've played our way into a position here where we control our own fate and we can play our way into the playoffs. I want to be involved. There's nothing like playoff hockey. It's the best time of the year, and I've missed it.
Has this happened quicker than you thought, the way that you guys are contending?
A little bit quicker, and I think a big, you know, I would say to you two or three things. You know, I went through a process to hire Dave Tippett as the coach, and I think as a general manager, if not the most important decision you're going to make, one of the most important decisions you're going to make is who you hire as the head coach. And, you know, Dave had a tremendous, played in the NHL and a tremendous resume as a coach in Dallas and in Arizona. I talked a lot. Doug Armstrong, I'm really good friends with Doug Armstrong. Doug worked with Tip in Dallas. I called two, three players that had played for Tip, a couple in the American League, a couple in the NHL. And at every turn, everywhere I got was nothing but positives, and made the decision to hire Dave Tippett. And getting to work with him on an everyday basis, I have a tremendous respect for the job that he does on an everyday basis in making our team better. And I think he deserves a ton of credit for us to be where we were at today, right? And again, you know, got us prepared. We got out of the gate. We got 7-2-1. It was important we got out of the gate to kind of put points on the board, start to believe that, and then we sort of leveled off. And like I said, for 30 games, we just sort of played 500, one game under 500, and made the move to bring up Yamamoto and some things. But throughout it all, I think Dave Tippett has done an unreal job in communicating with our players, all of our players. And having a vision, you know, at his opening press conference, he talked about his vision to see, you know, you'd come in and you got Connor McDavid, who's, you know, one of the greatest players in the NHL, maybe the best player in the NHL, but certainly with his age, the possibilities and what he's accomplished in his career, he's a special, special talent. And then you got Leon Draisaitl, who's the first player in the NHL in the last 6 years to get 50 goals and 100 points in the same season. You got two special players that played together, and certainly, but Dave talked at his opening press conference about having them on separate lines. Well, you know, that's not what they had a ton of success together. You know, one guy second in the league and scoring 100 and something points, and they both have 100 plus points. One guy's got 50 goals. So, you know, to start the season, they're on the same line and they're providing offense. And we went out and signed a lot of players that had played pro hockey. You know, I call them pros, hoping to get more depth, more competition to the bottom part of our roster. So if we had injuries, competition. And they did a good job in the penalty kill. But early on, we were a one-line team. And hard to run like that for 80 games. As great as they are. And then, like I said, we sort of leveled off. And then when Dave made the, you know, pulled some strings, did some things, we become a two-line team. Certainly Dave Tippett gets, in my mind, gets a ton of credit for where we are today. And so I guess if he had said to me on, you know, June the 26th, you know, the draft's over, and for 8 days, every NHL organization from 7 in the morning to about 6, 7 at night, you're hunkered in, and there's that interview window, and you're talking to people, and all around the league, we're talking to people, and we got names on a board, and there's lots of empty boxes, and we're trying to figure out exactly where we're going to go. If you'd have said to me on that day that you're going to wake up on whatever today is, March the 4th or 5th, that we would be in the thick of things, I would have taken that. But you don't. But as you go along day after day, you know, you just do your thing. You do your thing. The coach is coaching. The players are playing. The manager's managing. You talk to the scouts. You do your thing. And every day you're trying to figure out how you're going to get. And that 31 teams are doing that. 31 teams are doing that. And certainly, you know, the coach and the players. The players have totally bought in. I know the players. They want to win. It's no fun to miss the playoffs. That's why we play the game, is to be involved in games that mean something to both teams. So are we ahead of where we're at? I'm not really, you know. Certainly, I said at my opening press conference on March the 1st, I want to be in the race. That's the goal. That was the goal, and we're in the race now. Still got a ways to go, but happy with where we're at right now.
Tell us something about Connor McDavid we don't know that you have learned since you've gotten there with him.
I don't know. You know what? Loves to play hockey. You don't really – loves to play hockey. He's driven to be the best that he can be on an everyday basis. You know, it's funny. I took – you know, as I went through the process with Bob Nicholson, and obviously Connor at the end of the year – had got injured on the last day of the season. And at the interview process, you know, on occasion, you know, I'd say, how's Connor doing? And, oh, he's doing good. And he's doing good. And so, I kind of onto something else. And then I accepted the job. And shortly thereafter, I got onto a conference call with Jeff Jackson, the agent for Connor. And he had some, you know, our doctor, our trainer, a medical person, there's a couple other people from Connor's team and when he trains all summer. And all of a sudden the conversation talked about, well, we're not sure if he'll be ready for opening day, and you know, we think he'll be ready for December for sure. And I'm thinking, holy cow, this is information that Bob Nicholson withheld on me. And Bob and I laugh about it occasionally. And then going forward on a regular basis, talking to our training staff and talking to Jeff Jackson and seeing how hard Connor worked and pushed himself all of June, all of July, all of August. His goal was to be in the lineup on opening night. Right off the bat, I knew how passionate. You know, they sent me videos, and you know, it was June, and he was, you know, in the pool, and he was doing exercises, and he was doing this, and it kind of went to where he was skating on his own in July. And I would get, about twice a week, I would get little videos on my phone to kind of follow the progress, because he was in Toronto, and our training staff was in communication with Connor's people in Toronto. And then a couple of times our training staff went out to meet with him to make sure that everybody was on the same page. But to see how driven he was to be in the lineup for opening night, and he made it right off the bat, speaks to, people just see the games, but the sacrifice that he gets up every morning, it's day after day after day, early there, he's there till 2-3 in the afternoon, and you go to bed early, and you're back there first thing in the morning, and you're pushing and you're pushing and you're pushing and you're pushing. And then to come watch him through training camp and through the early of the season, he wants to win. He doesn't want the story to be about him, but it's about he's such a great player. Lots of times the story is about him, but he likes to see all his teammates get the accolades and credit and talk about his teammates. But just he's an incredible athlete, and he's driven to be the best. He wants the team to win.
Did you know that Leon Draisaitl was this good?
No, Yes, I mean, I knew he was this good statistically. You know, I'm living in Detroit.
Right.
I'm in the Eastern Conference. Edmonton's in the West. You know, when I was, you know, when the Red Wings were in the Western Conference, I used to go to bed at 12:30 to 1 o'clock every night because I stayed up to watch because that was our conference.
Right.
We were in the Western Conference, and I wanted to watch every game, and you know, because you want to know your conference, you want to know your division, you want to know the scorers. You had to, you know, who are we competing against? And then when the Red Wings moved to the Eastern Conference, certainly I watched all the games. If I wasn't out scouting, I'm watching all the games. I'm home for a night off, you know, at 7 o'clock, and you're nestled into the games from the East. But when the games got to be about 11 or 11:30 and you're into the West, I didn't pay quite as much attention to them to the Western Conference as I did when we were in that conference. So I certainly was aware of the statistics. You know, you score 50 goals and you get 100 points and you're 23 years age. I know that it gets my attention in a hurry, but to watch him play on an everyday basis, I didn't know how good he was. He's big, he's strong, he's powerful. You know, to have that skill and to be as big a man as he's a big, strong, powerful man that in the corners can't be budged, and then his hockey sense to, you know, make little plays under pressure. To watch him on an everyday basis, he is a very special player.
To hear you talk about the postseason, the Stanley Cup playoffs being what it's all about, and just even as you're talking about it now, getting excited, it always surprises me that there are some players who don't want to leave like a comfortable situation when they're not going to make the playoffs to go to a contender, whether it's as a rental player. Or does that surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to judge. I guess I only can put you. I was so fortunate to be in Detroit and to work with the people that I did on and off the ice. And really the Red Wings, you know, Jim Devolano drafted Steve Yzerman, and then, you know, I think the 89 draft when we drafted Lidstrom, Fedorov, and Konstantinov joined from that draft two to 3 years later, those players played together, and that was the beginning of the Detroit Red Wings. And then Scotty Bowman came in and we won the Cup in 97 and 98. But we made the playoffs 25 straight years in a row. So, you know, when I became part of the Red Wings in 1985-86, we had 40 points. We had the first pick in the draft and we drafted Joe Murphy. So I've sort of seen both sides of it. And I can tell you, the 25 years in a row was way more fun than picking first overall. And with all the excitement having the first pick in the draft, it's way more fun to have to be in the playoffs, to be a part of the tournament, and, you know, to win a playoff game, and the excitement that your fan base feels, and looking forward 2 days later to playing another big game. I was fortunate to be a part of that tournament. That when we were out 3 years in a row, felt a lot longer than 3 years. And I'm sure the Red Wing fans, you know, that's the frustration. I mean, they got to for so many years. You knew that when April came around, the calendar turned to April, the games were getting bigger, and who are we going to play in the first round playoffs? And then you got that first round matchup, and if you're able to win in advance, it's deeper, and the weather's nice, and the games are getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So I was fortunate to live that on an everyday basis, and then to miss it for 3 years in a row, you know, certainly 1920, one of my goals as a manager for our team was be in the playoffs for a whole variety of reasons. But the biggest reason is once you get in the salary cap era, the competitive balance, anything can happen. You look at Tampa Bay last year, who had 125 or 26 points, got swept. Calgary was the first in the West, won one game. It's wide open. It's wide open, and anything can happen. And it's the most exciting time of the year for a whole variety of reasons. So I personally was spoiled. I was fortunate. I was very, very lucky, and I really missed being involved in part of the tournament those 3 years. And every time we win a game, put 2 points on the board, it's you know, you feel better about your situation, and certainly one of our goals is to be in a playoff series, and we're in the mix.
You mentioned players taking less money to play in Detroit. I mean, from Brett Hull to, you know, Brendan Shanahan. Will that ever happen again?
I don't think it. I think it does on certain situations, but I think there's way more money in the game. You know, like, so if back. I'm going to go back to maybe, you know, 2000, you know, 20 years ago. 20 years ago, Red Wings won the Cup in 97, won the Cup in 98.
There aren't, like, teams anymore either that are a guarantee to get to the playoffs or to be a contender. You know, there's very few guarantees from the players' perspective.
Yeah, and I was going to say there's five or six. First off, the league is younger. So, for the most part, older players are going to be more in that mindset. They've sort of had, you know, you're young. You know, first thing you do is want to play in the NHL. You know, I want to play in the NHL. And then you play in the NHL for a bit. Well, I want to make some money. You know, like, I want to put some stats on the board, and I want to be able to. So my agent's got, you know, and you go through a process, and then you start to get to some point in time where the priority is to win, but there's a process to get there. So, you know, the 0-2 Red Wing team, the Lidstrom, Hasek, Chelios, I don't know how many players we had around 40 years of age, 40 plus. So they just wanted to make decisions to win because they'd had a career of earning money. So the league is younger, and, you know, there's more money in the game. The salary cap today obviously is $80 million. Now, I think Red Wings had an $80 million payroll in 2002, but there was only five or six teams like us, you know, that spent. Dallas, Colorado, Detroit, Philadelphia, Toronto. And then there was, I think we played Nashville in the playoffs in 2004. We had like a $75 million payroll. I think they had like a $20 million wow. payroll. So it's way different. And there's more money. So if you leave $300 or $400 on the table, certainly that helps the overall scheme of things. But at the end of the day, it's a different time. Younger league. You could identify 6 to 8 teams that had a real chance: New Jersey, Philadelphia, Toronto, Dallas, Colorado, Detroit. Well, there's 20 of those teams now. So, you know, there's lots of teams that can go on a playoff run. You know, last year was a classic example. St. Louis Blues on the 1st of January, I think they're dead last in the National Hockey League in points. And 6 months later, they are the Stanley Cup champs. That's the beauty of this league today. Like, it's you don't know. There's so many teams, and they're talking, you know, all-time records and lead changes and teams being behind 2 goals and 3 goals and comebacks. The league is incredible now. It's more wide open. It's more parity. The teams are close, and everybody's pushing. The game has changed for the better, and it's more exciting for the fans, but it's harder to predict, and that's a good thing.
You went through the wars with Mike Babcock.
Yes.
Won a lot of games, a lot of cups, celebrated. When he was let go in Toronto and some stories started to surface that his coaching style and some of his methodology was criticized, what did you think?
Mike is a demanding coach. But I think you need to be, you know, I think you can still coach today and be demanding. You need to be demanding. Certainly, there's lots of players in that locker room in Detroit that played for Mike that had no issue, in my opinion, had no issue, never came. Was there 2, 3, 4 players that had issue with how he coached on an everyday basis? No doubt. Was there players when I played in 1975 that had issues with the coach? No doubt. And will it happen 10 years from now? But I think, you know, I think that certainly the workplace has to be about respect, both ways. you know, from the coach, the player coach relationship, the manager player, it has to be about respect. Mike's got a ton of passion. He's got a tremendous work ethic. He's demanding. He pushes his players. Would some players feel that they were pushed too hard? Probably. Do some players on that team have had no issue? I know for a fact there's players on that team had no issue with how he pushed the team. So I would say too, and with what happened in that time period 6 months ago or 5 months, however, 4 or 5 months ago, I think that it's going to be for the betterment of our sport, our industry.
Does he want to come back and coach again? You think he'll coach again?
I think so. I mean, I've talked to Mike a little bit, if 3, 4 times, 5 times since he was let go. I haven't really asked him, but you know, we worked together for 10 years. You know, we had a general manager coach relationship. You know, his wife and my wife were friends, so they sat together often at games, and on occasion we would go out for dinner. But when you're working all day, he's got his kids and family, and I've got my kids and family. I do know he's got incredible passion. He's got an incredible work ethic, and he's driven. So, do I think he wants to coach again? I would think that he would want to coach again because he loves coaching. He loves coaching, and I'm sure he'll kind of. We all, you know, when you're out of the that brief period of time when I knew I was out on my way out in Detroit and was in Edmonton, you know, you quickly reflect on things that you might do differently or better, and I'm sure Mike's got some time here in the wintertime to kind of self-assess.
After working with Steve Yzerman for so many years now, it was not totally new because he was in Tampa for a while, but here you are the GM in Edmonton and he's in Detroit. You made a couple of deals at the trading deadline.
Yeah.
Tell us what that was like.
Well, actually Steve and I had made a deal when he was in Tampa. I traded a draft pick. I think I ended up with Kyle Quincy, and he got a draft pick. And so Steve and I did a deal when he was in Tampa. You know, I knew the players in Detroit. So Steve and I talked. I saw him at the World Junior. He was at the World Junior. I was at the World Junior. They were having a tough year, and I wasn't sure where we were at. We were just sort of hanging. You touch base, and because not only we got the manager relationship, we got a friendship relationship, and you know, obviously, from afar, they're in the Eastern Conference. I'm pulling for those people. I know all those people. I work with them. The players. I drafted Dylan Larkin and shook his hand when he came to the draft table, and Anthony Manth and Tyler Bertuzzi and Philip Hronek and, you know, Darren Helm and Justin Abdelkader and, you know, Steve Yzerman and hired Ryan Martin as to work for us in 2005. So I got relationships there that are going to go on the rest of my life. So I'm pulling for those people, and I feel terrible for what's going on in Detroit. So Steve and I continued to talk, and as we worked our way to the trade deadline, you know, as we started to win, you know, put this run together and started to play our way into buyer mode, I knew we needed, felt I wanted to get a little more depth on defense and get a little more depth up front. And Steve and I talked and eventually come up with the deals that we did. And certainly Steve's excited to get the draft picks, and I'm excited that we were able to add some NHL players, some depth, couple of NHL forwards. Unfortunately, Mike Green got hurt second game for us, or first game, got a sprained MCL.
But there's no discounts between the two of you.
No. There's no discounts. Although Steve gave me, when I was the manager and he was the player, he did give me discounts at that point in time. He could have been way more difficult at the negotiating table, but he's always negotiated tough.
I don't know if it was ever true or not, the story out there that you almost, or the Red Wings almost traded Steve to the Ottawa Senators. Is that ever close?
I wasn't in charge then. That was
You can't take responsibility for that.
I remember the rumors. Scotty Bowman was in charge at that point in time, director, head coach, and director of player personnel. So, Scotty never really. There was lots of rumors, you know, but I don't really recall.
You
Jim
can't
Devolano
confirm or deny
and,
yeah, that
I
ever
can't
happened.
Confirm or deny. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
A couple other things just about you. I know people love hearing your stories and getting to know you and everything. What do you do to get away? I mean, can you ever turn it off? What do you do to get away?
Well, I love, you know, first off, family. I like, when I can, I like to go. My wife, Cindy, and I like to go on some trips. You know, we like Broadway. We go to New York for a few days. We like going to Broadway plays. And then
I wouldn't have guessed that about you.
Yeah,
you know, I guess that's a stereotypical hockey guy.
Yeah, we love going to New York and going for a little, you know, a nice dinner at Restaurant Row, and then going to a Broadway play. I've probably seen Jersey Boy 8 or 9 or 10 times, and Mamma Mia 6 or 7 times. And
you sing in the car when you're on your way to work.
I listened to Jimmy Buffett. I loved the Jimmy Buffett, Margaritaville, Channel 24 on the radio. We just had our 7th grandchild.
Oh wow.
Last week. So we have 4 kids and spend time in the summer at our house in Vernon, and I love golf. I love golf because it gets me away, and it's my opportunity to be in the heat of the action, and it's sort of my way of getting the juices flowing that I had as a professional hockey player for 9 years. Certainly I've got those my juices float as an NHL general manager, but they're mental juices, you know, and when I go to play golf now, it's physical. And so I've got a bunch of guys that we go golfing with. I go on golf trips once a year in for about 7 to 10 days in August. We go to either to Europe, we go to Bandon Dunes.
Now, I've heard about this group, because there's some strict rules.
Yes.
Are you like a detail-oriented?
Very, very detailed. Okay. This is competition. It's a bunch of people that we kind of all have similar handicaps. We got the same passion for the sport. And, you know, we golf all day. We play 36, and then we have a few dinner and a couple drinks and talk about the day, and then we go back at it again the next day. And certainly I love that our August trip that I think it's been about 20 years, and we go different places. I'm the organizer. I pick the spots and get the groups. I've probably got about 40 people and every year there's 20 to 28 that kind of go on the trip, and it shuffles around a little bit. I've got about 10 or 12 that as soon as I send out the email, they're in. And I start to build the group. But it's that's sort of golf for me personally. Golf is my getaway. And then obviously my time with my wife, Cindy, and our children and grandchildren.
Now, you, every time I see you, you're going 90 miles an hour. So do you ever, you know, some of the GMs, we ask if you're on the charter, are you doing crossword puzzles? Are you binging on Netflix? Are you reading? You know, you seem to...
I'm always... You know
always
what?
Doing something.
You know what I'm an organizer, so I'm on the. I'm always organizing. I'm looking at the,
like an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, well, it's in my mind. You know, the 2021 Edmonton Oilers, and what does the team look? And I've got to go here, and I want to go there, and I want to go see this player. I got to go to Europe. I got to go here. I got to go there, and then you know, times of the year. The trade deadline's over. I know I got to make a few emails because I'm the organizer. If we're going to go to Europe, and I got to make sure I send out my emails, and my emails come back, and I'm building my golf trip, and you know, I take great pride on that we built the Traverse City Prospect Tournament. I love that tournament and how important that tournament is to the city of Traverse City, and we have training camp there. And 10 years ago, they built $1 million expansion on the rink, and we hold a golf tournament. And I say we being a Red Wing. Now I'm a now I work.
Do you ever
for the
look
Edmonton
at
Orders.
The score by accident? Think, oh, we won or lost.
No, I'm more on top of it. But it took me a while to use my phone. Used to have the Red Wings were always up about 40 games in. Well, then I clicked it, and I've now got the Oilers there, and the Red Wings are down. It's just another score on the board. So, but I like to build things. I like to build a golf trip. I like to try to build a hockey team. I like to organize. That's what excites, you know. That's what I enjoy. It really comes from my dad. I can remember growing up, being 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age, playing minor hockey, playing minor baseball in Vernon, BC, and coming down the stairs. And if I was, my dad was the head of the Pee-wee division, or the head of the Bantam division, whatever division I was in, the Little League baseball, and then Babe Ruth baseball, and senior Babe Ruth baseball. And he would, you know, when I was 10 or 11 years old playing for the Vernon Travel Pee-wees, he was the manager, but he would do schedules. And I'd come down, I'd see sheets, 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6, 1 versus, and in Tuesday, Thursday, and he built the schedule. He built the schedule, and then he was the general manager, so he was on the phone calling Revelstoke.
I can't believe you remember all these little teams.
Coach to set up an exhibition game, and then he'd set up, John Zahara, coach, was going to drive one car. My dad would have a car, and John Zahara would take these three kids, and I'd say, Dad, these are my two best friends. I want them in the car, and my dad teed up the four or five drivers, and we were going to drive to Revelstoke to play. It was an hour, 90-minute driveway to play the game, or we had our league game in Kelowna, league game in Penticton. My dad was always organized. I'd come down. And then we'd go to the ballpark, and he would be an umpire, and or he was either on the bench, he was coaching, or he was at the first base ump, and then he would be, and my dad worked for BC Hydro, and he drove the truck, and then it would say, let's say there was lightning, and so my mom would be at home, and all of a sudden she would come down because there was a trouble call, and he had to work overtime, so she would come flying down to Polson Park with my dad's work clothes and yelling, Riney, they're calling. And then he'd have to get someone to ump at first base, and he'd grab his work clothes, he'd jump in the car, and he'd fly off to BC. My mom would take him to BC Hydro because he had to quickly be there for the linemen and take them out on a trouble call. And then I'd go home with somebody else. But so it was always, so what I got from my dad was organizing. My dad loved to organize. He organized from the time I was 6 or 7 until I was, till I left home when I was 19. He was always involved in the organization aspect, not the coaching aspect. He coached a little bit on the bench, but his passion was organizing Vernon Minor Hockey, the divisions, the schedules, the ice time. He would get the ice schedule from the the rec director in Vernon, and he had to kind of divvy out the ice. So he would be downstairs at the desk, and I'm flying around outside playing road hockey and shooting balls and at the net, and then the kids are over, and then I'd come flying down and see him there organizing and kind of look at the things. And what are you doing there, Dad? He would tell me a little bit, and I'd pop over and look at Hockey Night in Canada. It was on TV on a Saturday night, and then back out you'd go. But I saw my dad organizing, so I think that's where I've got. I like to organize. I like to be involved in organizing things, and certainly I take great pride in being a general manager. It's the ultimate challenge to organize an NHL team. But for me personally, my getaways, I like to organize some things with my friends, or organizing trips with my wife, little getaways that I'll tell my wife we're gonna get away here, we're gonna get away there, and she I'll organize the Broadway plays and where we're gonna go for dinner, and I know it keeps my mind going. Otherwise, my mind must stray. It keeps me focused.
Christmas Day for you must be when the NHL schedule comes out.
That must be
like your favorite day of the year.
I comb through that schedule. Well, I actually like the draft. When Steve Hetzer-Petros sends out the first draft in about mid-May, and you get to comb through there, and you get your first look, or mid to late May. It's about 3 weeks before the season comes out. You start combing away and call it, can we move this, that, and can we do this, and try to tweak it. And I'm sure Steve gets those calls from 30 other general managers, but that's you get to go to work on that, and then it gets official. The schedule comes out right around the NHL draft, the week before, I think the Monday before, and then it's official. And now you get to kind of pour through the schedule but organize training camp, and those are the things that get me excited.
Well, we certainly hope for you and Oiler Nation that you're organizing that first round playoff series.
Yeah,
right?
I'm hoping.
Thank you.
I enjoyed talking with you.
Hopefully you heard it in his voice, how absolutely energized Ken Holland is for this next chapter. And it makes so much sense why he is not one to sit on the sidelines. You can just tell he is thrilled to be back in the game. Such wonderful stories. We really appreciate him coming on, and we appreciate you for listening. We love the feedback. It goes a long way. Don't hesitate to rate and review, and you can subscribe for free, of course, wherever you get your podcasts. So until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.